Hello, this is Todd Durakon with the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, May 26, 2026, coming to you from my home studio. And we start this edition on the front page, Memorial Day 2026, Honor the Fallen Most Important. Ceremonies remember those who gave their lives in service. This article's by Valerie Wells, Decatur. Memorial Day is the unofficial start of summer, and a lot of people spend it having cookouts and fun, but that's not the reason for the day. This is the most important part of your day. This should be your first stop, said John Earl Wilder, Veterans of Foreign Wars Post 730. It's more important than cooking or drinking or anything else. This is the most important in remembrance of people who served and gave their lives for this country. It's good that some of us should still be able to come out here and support this. Memorial Day ceremonies were held at Fairview Park and at Graceland Cemetery on Monday. Wilder, whose VFW post laid one of the wreaths at Fairview Park, intended to attend the Graceland ceremony as well, which followed Fairview's. Sergeant First Class Leah Medina, who served with the Illinois National Guard in Afghanistan as Senior Vice Commander of VFW Post 99 and a life member of the Combat Veterans Motorcycle Association, was the featured speaker, and she too acknowledged that people want to have fun with family and friends on the holiday as long as they don't forget the reason for the day. She remembers listening to taps at a ceremony for the fallen while serving in Afghanistan and the tears that fell. Those moments changed me forever, she said, and taught me to never take a single moment for granted. The only Gold Star mother in attendance at Fairview was Julie Magana, whose son, Jesse Tilton, served as a medic with the 82nd Airborne and died in Afghanistan at the age of 23. She was accompanied by friends, including Navy veteran Andrew Henderson. We're here to support Julie and to remember Jesse, so Jesse's never forgotten, Henderson said. That's the most connected reason for all the fallen, and we know, unfortunately, we know a Gold Star mom. It's pretty important to attend stuff like this, to make sure they're remembered, Magana said, to hear their names. The Fairview Park ceremony was held in conjunction last year with the Graceland Cemetery event at the Korean War Veterans Memorial, but it's difficult for older people to navigate the cemetery grounds, said Veterans Assistance Commission Superintendent Greg Collins. The commission organizes the Fairview Park event. Several people asked for it to be moved back to the park, which is easier walking, and the ceremony returned there this year. Especially now that we have troops deployed, remembering why we're over there fighting to begin with is number one, Collins said. Those that did pay the ultimate sacrifice. Jesse Tilton, for instance, that we remember them, that soldiers and Marines and all of them to do that. Today it is very important to make sure we remember them for the sacrifice they made. Scouting America remembers, or members from Troops 43 and 475, arrived early to the event to help set up, and during the laying of the wreaths, scouts took their places behind the wreaths, so if a stray gust of wind came along, the wreaths would not fall over or blow away. At one time, said Scout Talford Eppard of Decatur, a member of Troop 43, the scouts were closely connected to the military, and even now, honoring veterans and the fallen is critical. We still honor all our veterans, and we can't really name another youth group that would do it, he said. The scouts also walked the area to pick up any trash to make sure it looked nice, he said. We're here to represent our troop and to honor our country, said Emma Ulis, a member of Troop 475. And some medium-sized color photos here. Members of Scout Troops 43 and 475 stand behind the wreaths laid by veterans organizations at the Memorial Day Cemetery in Fairview Park on Monday, May 25th. And they're under an enclosure in the pavilion. And let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 scouts behind the wreaths and flags behind them. Sergeant First Class Leah Medina of the Illinois National Guard speaks at the Fairview Park Memorial Service ceremony on Monday, May 25th, as Chairman William Haynes of the Veterans Assistance Commission listens. Both photos credits go to Valerie Wells Photos Herald and Review. And a large color photo that leads off the article, members of the Macon County Honor Guard fire a three-shot volley during the Memorial Day event at Fairview Park on Monday, May 25th. And there are seven members of the Honor Guard in the grass right in front of the flag pole. Valerie Wells, Herald and Review, photo credit. Village to Update Memorial, Scott Perry, Forsyth. The Village of Forsyth announced plans on Monday, Memorial Day, to renovate the community's Veterans Memorial. The renovation project will preserve the legacy of the existing memorial while creating an enhanced space for reflection, remembrance, ceremonies, and future generations, the village said in a news release. Planned improvements include military branch monuments, Army, Navy, Marine Corps, Coast Guard, Air Force, and Space Force, enhanced walkways and gathering spaces, restored flagpoles, relocated engraved pavers, landscaping improvements, seating areas, and additional memorial fixtures. The existing monument will be relocated and existing engraved bricks will be incorporated into the renovated design. The goal is to celebrate the completed memorial renovation during the Veterans Day ceremony on November 11th. This project is about honoring service, preserving history, and creating a place where families, veterans, and visitors can gather in remembrance and gratitude, said Village Administrator Jill Appleby. We are excited to provide opportunities for individuals, families, organizations, and businesses to be part of this lasting tribute. There are two ways to support the project. Commemorative engraved bricks can be purchased for $100 each. Bricks may honor veterans, active military members, loved ones, organizations, or messages of appreciation. The deadline to order commemorative bricks is July 1st. Sponsorship opportunities at financial levels of $5,000, $2,500, and $1,000 are available. Sponsors will be recognized on a supporting sign near the memorial and through village communications and event materials. Additional project information, sponsorship forms, commemorative brick order forms, and concept renderings are available at forsyth-il.gov/page/veterans. Middle East nations discuss potential Iran deal. Tehran says conclusion reached on many topics, but they're not close to signing an agreement. This article's by Michael Martina and Elweli Elweli, Reuters, New Delhi. Iran's top negotiator and its foreign minister were in Doha for talks with Qatar's prime minister on a potential deal with the U.S. to end the three-month-old war. An official briefed on the visit said Monday, after Washington and Tehran played down hopes for an imminent breakthrough. Earlier, U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio told reporters in New Delhi that the U.S. would give diplomacy every chance to succeed before considering whether to deal with Iran in, quote, another way, unquote. There was a pretty solid thing on the table in terms of their ability to open up the strait, get the Strait of Hormuz open, enter into a very real, significant, time-limited negotiation on the nuclear matter, and hopefully we can pull it off, Rubio said. In a lengthy social media post, President Donald Trump said talks with Iran were going nicely, but warned of fresh attacks if they failed. It will only be a great deal for all or no deal at all, he wrote. In his post, Trump argued, or rather urged, more Arab and Muslim states to sign up to the Abraham Accords, which were brokered during his first term in office, and aim to normalize ties between Arab and other Muslim majority states and Israel. He said Saudi Arabia and Qatar should immediately sign up, and everyone else should follow suit, calling his request mandatory. He also said that countries would be honored to have Iran as part of the accords once a deal to end the war is reached. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's office did not immediately respond to a request for comment on Trump's post. Iran's foreign ministry spokesperson, Esmael Baghaei, said in a weekly briefing Monday that a conclusion was reached on many topics, but that does not mean we're close to signing an agreement. The official briefed on the Iranians' Doha visit told Reuters the discussions were focused primarily on the Strait of Hormuz and Iran's stockpile of highly enriched uranium, while the country's central bank governor is also part of the delegation to discuss the potential release of frozen Iranian funds as part of a final deal. Baghaei said the potential memorandum of understanding contains 14 points and is focused on ending the war and the U.S. naval blockade of the Strait of Hormuz, in exchange for Iran taking steps to ensure the safe transit through the strategic waterways. He said the talks were not yet focusing on nuclear issues, however, which will be negotiated over a 60-day period if the framework accord is agreed. Trump said his key aim in the war is to prevent Iran from developing a nuclear weapon with its highly enriched uranium. Tehran consistently denied it has plans to do that. As efforts to reach a deal continued, Iran said it downed a hostile stealth drone using a new air defense system, Iranian news agency reported, without saying where it had come from. This is a sign from us that no more stealth drones can penetrate the skies of the Persian Gulf, Fars quoted unidentified officials as saying. Baghaei said the potential accord contained no specific details on management of the strait, through which about one-fifth of the world's oil and liquefied gas usually flows. Iran will not charge tolls for ships to pass through, Baghaei said. However, he added there would be a cost for services offered, such as navigation and steps to protect the environment under a protocol to be agreed with Oman, which shares the opposite shore of the waterway. The strait has been effectively closed since the U.S. and Israel launched strikes on Iran on February 28th, with only a handful of vessels passing through, compared with about 125 to 140 daily before the conflict. Iran's state TV said Monday that 32 vessels and 5 oil tankers passed through the Strait of Hormuz in 24 hours with the authorization of Iran's Revolutionary Guards, naval forces, and it reiterated that no vessel would be allowed to transit without coordination with the IRGC. The energy crisis due to the Hormuz standoff caused a spike in oil prices and driven up the costs of fuel, fertilizer, and food. Oil prices fell more than 4% to two-week lows on Monday on optimism that the U.S. and Iran might be moving closer to a deal. Trump, whose approval ratings were hit by the war's impact on U.S. energy prices and who faced congressional efforts to curb his war powers, has repeatedly played up the prospect of a deal to end the war. The two sides remain at odds on several issues, however, including Israel's war in Lebanon, with the Iranian-backed Hezbollah militants in Tehran's demands for the lifting of sanctions and the release of tens of billions of dollars of Iranian oil revenues frozen in foreign banks. Israeli Finance Minister Bezalel Smotrich on Monday called on Netanyahu to resume bombing Beirut in response to Hezbollah's increased explosive drone attacks on Israeli troops in northern Israeli towns. For every explosive drone, 10 buildings should fall in Beirut, Smotrich said in a statement. Smotrich's comments came after an Israeli soldier was killed by a Hezbollah drone attack Sunday. Israeli media reported that he made similar remarks at a cabinet meeting Sunday. Israeli media reported that Netanyahu rejected Smotrich's demands and preferred defensive measures. A Netanyahu spokesperson declined to comment. And a medium-sized color photo here. People walk Monday past a billboard with a picture of Iranian people in Tehran. And it's a busy intersection with yellow cabs and motorcycles, and it looks like traffic going in several directions, and people walking in the street on a bright sunny day. Majid Aghsgripour, West Asia News Agency, photo credit. Onto a three local and nation man facing murder charge, articles by Scott Perry, Decatur. Decatur police have made an arrest in the fatal shooting of Diamante L. Weaver. According to a news release, Jarvis M. Smith, Jr., 21, of Decatur, was taken into custody Friday in the 1000 block of West Main Street by United States Marshals Service Great Lakes Regional Task Force. Smith was booked into the Macon County Jail on a preliminary charge of first-degree murder. Reports from the Decatur Police Department said officers found the mortally wounded man Friday morning after responding to 911 calls about a shooting in the area of North Poole and West Center Streets. A news release said officers discovered Weaver inside a house in the 900 block of West Center Street. Macon County Coroner Michael D. Burkham said the 23-year-old victim was pronounced dead Friday morning after being taken to Decatur Memorial Hospital. The investigation is ongoing. Mace targets naturalized U.S. citizens. She proposes banning them from serving in Congress and federal roles. It's articles by Natalie Nasa Alund, USA Today. Representative Nancy Mace is pushing to bar naturalized Americans from serving in Congress or other high levels of the federal government. A Republican from South Carolina, Mace has unveiled legislation aiming to ban foreign-born U.S. citizens from becoming federal judges and being appointed to Senate-confirmed positions. Mace, 48, called her push a long-overdue joint resolution for the constitutional amendment. This is the very same standard the president and vice president are already required to meet, Mace, proposing a constitutional amendment for the ban, wrote in an X post on May 20th. The people writing America's laws, confirming America's judges, and representing America on the world stage should have one loyalty, America, not any other country. Mace's push comes as multiple courts across the nation have issued decisions on birthright citizenship after President Donald Trump's February executive order directing federal agencies not to recognize the citizenship of babies born in the United States if neither parent is a citizen or lawful permanent resident. The U.S. Supreme Court on May 21st continued rolling out decisions for the term, including Trump's order as well as fights over transgender athletes. Earlier this year, the president predicted the justices would also strike down his efforts to sharply limit U.S. or who qualifies for automatic U.S. citizenship. In her post, Mace targeted three current U.S. representatives born outside the United States: Ilhan Omar, a Democrat from Minnesota, born in Somalia; Sri Thaneda, a Democrat from Michigan, born in India; and Pramila Jayapal, a Democrat from Washington, born in India. All born in foreign countries, none were citizens by birth. All sitting in the United States Congress, she wrote, all making clear every single day their loyalty is not to America. World's tallest thermometer for sale. Eli Segal, Las Vegas Review Journal. The giant roadside thermometer between Las Vegas and Los Angeles, a towering sight for legions of highway drivers, is for sale. A spread of real estate in Baker, California, along Interstate 15, roughly 90 miles southwest of the Las Vegas Strip, recently went on the market for $1.85 million, listing sites show. The 4.3-acre tract includes the iconic 134-foot thermometer, billed as the world's tallest, and an adjacent retail building that's home to a souvenir shop called Temp 134. The listing says the landmark is known worldwide, and at its core, 134 feet of vertical advertising space. The towering temperature reader on Baker Boulevard calls Baker the gateway to Death Valley, where, according to the National Park Service, the world's highest air temperature was ever recorded in the summer of 1913 at 134 degrees. Listing broker Baron Castillo, owner of real estate firm Apartment Buildings Investments, told the Las Vegas Review Journal on Thursday that the thermometer has been refurbished and is up and running better than ever now. He also figures the buyer will be from Las Vegas, as masses of tourists and others regularly drive between Southern Nevada and Southern California on I-15, and the giant thermometer is hard to miss. Castillo, who noted the land for sale includes an EV charging station, said a buyer could add digital signage on the thermometer to flash their logo. They could also convert the retail shop into, say, a restaurant, cafe, or microbrewery, giving travelers a place to hang out while their cars recharge, he said. That would be the best use for it, I believe, he said. Baker, an unincorporated town in San Bernardino County, is a tiny outpost in the desert. It spans just 2.7 square miles and had only 442 residents as of the 2020 census, according to the U.S. Census Bureau. Its famous roadside attraction was built in 1991, but before it was officially lit, high winds knocked it over, and it was rebuilt to be even stronger and resistant to powerful gusts, according to the world's tallest thermometer website. And a small color photo here. The world's tallest thermometer is seen on July 27, 2016 in Baker, California, and it is showing 115, looks like, 115 degrees is what I can see. And it's a bright sunny day, and the gift shop is down below, and U.S. flag and California flag here flying in the background. Carrie Greer, Devino, Tribune News Service, photo credit. Study: GLP-1s may hinder cancer spread. Anthony Thompson, USA Today. Weight loss and diabetes drugs such as Ozempic, Wegovy, and Zepbound may do more than help patients manage blood sugar and obesity, according to new research led by the Cleveland Clinic. The study, posted last week on the American Society of Clinical Oncology website, found that people taking GLP-1 drugs were less likely to see certain obesity-related cancers spread, including lung, breast, colorectal, and liver cancers. Researchers said the findings add to a growing body of evidence suggesting GLP-1 drugs may have anti-inflammatory and anti-tumor effects beyond their role in diabetes and weight management. The research has not yet been published in a peer-reviewed journal, and experts cautioned that the study was observational, meaning it cannot prove the drugs directly slowed cancer progression. Still, researchers and outside experts said the results are promising enough to justify larger randomized clinical trials. Dr. Mark David Orland of the Cleveland Clinic's Taussig Cancer Institute led the research using data from the TriNeX Global Health Research Network. Investigators analyzed records from 12,112 patients diagnosed with stage 1 through stage 3 cancers. The study included 7 obesity-related cancers: breast, colorectal, prostate, pancreatic, liver, kidney, and non-small cell lung cancer. Half the patients began taking GLP-1 drugs, while the other half took DPP-4 inhibitors, another class of type 2 diabetes medications. Researchers matched patients based on factors including age, body mass index, smoking history, cancer treatments, and other health conditions to make the groups as comparable as possible. The main goal of the study was to see whether patients' cancers spread and advanced to stage 4 disease. Researchers found lower rates of cancer progression in 6 of the 7 cancer types studied among patients taking GLP-1 drugs. 4 cancers showed statistically significant reductions: non-small cell lung cancer, breast cancer, colorectal cancer, and liver cancer. Among lung cancer patients, 10% of those taking GLP-1 drugs progressed to stage 4 disease, compared with 22% of those taking DPP-4 inhibitors. Breast cancer patients taking GLP-1 medications had progression rates of 10% compared with 20% in the control group. Colorectal cancer progression occurred in 13% of GLP-1 users versus 22% of DPP-4 inhibitor users, while liver cancer progression occurred in 19% versus 28%. We have just a few minutes left here, so we'll wrap up this first half hour on the weather page on B8 with the Decatur 4-day forecast. Today, clouds and limited sun, wind east-southeast 6 to 12 miles per hour, high of 82. Tonight, a thunderstorm in spots, wind southeast 4 to 8 miles per hour, low of 63. Wednesday, humid with a thunderstorm, wind east-southeast 4 to 8 miles per hour, high of 80, low of 62. Thursday, partly sunny, wind east-northeast 7 to 14 miles per hour, high of 84 and low of 59. Friday, partial sunshine, wind southeast 6 to 12 miles per hour, high of 79, low of 55. Regional outlook, clouds and limited sun. Today, expect between 3 and 6 hours of sunshine with average relative humidity 55% and fair drying conditions. A thunderstorm in spots tonight. Chance of precipitation 55%. And the Skywatch, sunrise 5:32 a.m. set 8:13 p.m. Moonrise 4:03 p.m. set 2:47 a.m. Full moon May 31st. Last quarter moon, June 8th, new moon, June 14th, and first quarter moon, June 21st. Real field today, 67 degrees at 8 a.m., 84 degrees at noon and 4 p.m., and then dropping to 74 degrees at 8 p.m. Well, that brings us to the end of the first half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review. For Tuesday, May 26, 2026, we'll take a short break and return with the second half hour.